From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Last week, we talked about Our Lady of Fatima, and we had the feast day, May 13th, happening last week, big celebration of the gold standard of Marian apparitions, as I like to call it, Our Lady of the Rosary of Fatima. And we're going to be continuing that conversation today. We'll be speaking with Father Ed Broom, who's the author of The Compendium of Marian Devotions, an encyclopedia of the Church's prayers, dogmas, devotions, sacramentals, and feasts, honoring the Mother of God. And we're going to be looking specifically at one of the three seers at Fatima, one of the three shepherd children, and that is Saint Jacinta. He just wrote a new article on Catholic Exchange. We'll be examining the spirituality of one of those young saints in the trio of the Fatima visionaries. We'll also be talking with John Thavis. He's one of my favorite guests. We spoke with him some time ago. He's the former Rome Bureau Chief of the Catholic News Service and author of the book, The Vatican Prophecies, Investigating Supernatural Signs, Apparitions, and Miracles in the Modern Age. He's going to give us some reflections on Marian apparitions, especially in light of the new statement that has just come out this past week. Check out my show, Explore with the Miracle Hunter. This time we go to Champion, and it'll be Saturday, the 25th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. We'll be going to Champion, Wisconsin, where the Virgin Mary appeared to Belgian farm worker Adele Bryce in the year 1859. This is the first and only church-approved Marian apparition in the United States. Check that one out. And for people who miss it, you can always visit the shrine itself. They have this episode's playing on a loop in their museum room there at the shrine in Champion. So this is a great episode to learn all the details of what was claimed there in 1859. And the next episode of They Might Be Saints, airing this Wednesday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, looks at the life of Blessed Miriam Teresa Demjanovic. She had a short but impactful life, and I present the case of her canonization for the Sister of Charity, which includes the only known cure of bilateral macular degeneration. There's quite a nice recreation of the boy, Michael Menser, whose eyesight is restored in that episode. So check that one out. They Might Be Saints, Blessed Miriam Teresa Demjanovic, on Wednesday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. Later in the show, we're going to be doing, as we always do, we look at the 365 Days with Mary project. Believe it or not, there's a Marian devotion for each and every day of the calendar year. You all know Fatima, Lourdes, and Guadalupe, but there's a different one for each day of the calendar year. So for today's date, we've got Our Lady of Wesemlin from Lucerne in Switzerland in the year 1531. And the Might Be Saint of the Day, Blessed Blandina Merton from Germany. She lived from 1883 to 1918. The question of the week, why are certain popes like Pope Leo XIII not canonized or even have a cause started on their behalf? It's a hard one. I'll do my best to answer that one later in the show. And the miracle of the day, on May 18th, 1986 in Shubra, there was a girl in Egypt cured of blindness. So we'll be looking at that miracle story in just a little bit. Let's take a look at the miracle news. We do this every week where we talk about the miracles happening all around the world and those things that relate to miracles. And for people who want to keep up to date on the latest miracle information, you can connect to the Facebook page of The Miracle Hunter. I post all these items there, and I always try to relate the most popular, the one gaining the most attention on Facebook. I try to relay that on the day's show. And so there is a new statement that has come out related to the apparitions in Angra in Bahia, Brazil. And there's a document from the Brazilian Portuguese that came out related to sort of an unfavorable opinion that was given to the supposed apparitions there. And I should probably point out that it doesn't appear that this statement is of the negative category, which is constate non supernaturalitate, which is established as not supernatural, the definitively not supernatural, the somewhat of a condemnation. This appears to be something more in the middle category of non constat, meaning it's not established or they don't see any evidence for supernaturality. So I'll read a little bit of this statement to you. And so this is from the Archdiocese of Feria de Santana, in that is a pastoral letter to the Catholic faithful about the presumed apparitions of Our Lady in Angra in Brazil. the bishop starts by saying, "Grace and peace in Christ our risen Lord." He said, "Devotion to the Virgin Mary originates, reflects, and finds complete expression in the cult of Christ, and through him in the Holy Spirit leads to the Father, thus becoming a qualifying element of the genuine piety of the Church." That's a quote from Marialis Cultis. And later on in this long document, he talks about some of the appearances that have been claimed. He says, "The phenomena of apparitions and private revelations mainly related to the Blessed Virgin Mary have multiplied significantly in Brazil and elsewhere. In this way, many people in a sincere search for God have followed these seers," and he says, quote-unquote seers, "as if they were the only reference of Catholic faith and even the only authorities with regard to Catholic doctrine, and as if they were a witness qualified by the Church's own faith tradition. In this sense, many people follow them without the necessary discernment, such as theological doctrinal training, accurate catechesis, critical sense and prudent ecclesiastical attention. It is also in this context that the phenomena of the well-known, quote-unquote, appearances of Our Lady in the municipality of Anguera in the Archdiocese of Feira de Santana is growing. The Archdiocese has cautiously monitored the phenomena of, quote-unquote, apparitions in Anguera, and above all, through a theological pastoral commission consulted by the Metropolitan Archbishop with the purpose of observing and discerning about this phenomenon from a doctrinal point of view, ecclesiastical, pastoral, and psychic spiritual point of view. That is, analyzing it in the light of the entire tradition of the Church in its biblical, patristic, liturgical, and theological expression, tradition that is transmitted, taught, and updated, uninterrupted by the living magisterium." And so that is just one aspect of this document. He goes on to say that he does not encourage devotion here. He does not condemn it as being not supernatural, but he goes on to say that it is not to be followed there for people in his diocese. And we thank Andre Santos from Brazil for forwarding this document, which will be added to the archive on the Miracle Hunter website of all the church statements that we have there. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week where we ask a trivia question and give out a prize, the Miracle Hunter image of the faces of Mary. And last week we asked the question, the crown of the statue is of Our Lady of Fatima is an offering by Portuguese women in thanksgiving for Portugal having not entered World War II and consequently saving their men from having to fight in war. And this crown is believed to have 3,000 precious stones. So this is the answer to the question, what is the meaning of the precious gems that are embedded in the crown of Our Lady of Fatima? Nobody wrote in with that correct answer, but perhaps we'll be seeing an answer to this question coming up. The trivia question for this week, we're talking about Saint Jacinta and Our Lady of Fatima. The children received visions of the Angel of Portugal in 1916. Who was the fourth visionary that joined the three children for those visions of that angel? Again, the question for this week, who was the fourth visionary who joined the children in 1916 for the visions of the Angel of Portugal? If you think you know that answer and want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to miraclehunter@ewtn.com or questions@miraclehunter.com, and we'll see who has the fastest answer, and answers and winners will be posted on the show page of miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Father Ed Broom about Saint Jacinta and Our Lady of Fatima. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. We love talking about Our Lady of Fatima on this program, and of course, last week we had the big feast day on May 13th, and we can't help when we reflect on those great apparitions of Our Lady of the Rosary to the three shepherd children of Fatima, we can't help but think about the seers themselves, the two that died at a very young age, and Sister Lucia, now Venerable Lucia, died in an older age, but we always try to reflect on the younger two, I think, to try to figure out the angle to their holiness, what propelled them to be saints at such a young age? Well, there's a great new article that just came out on Catholic Exchange. It's called Saint Jacinta and Our Lady of Fatima. It was written by Father Ed Broom. We've had him on the show before. He's the author of the Compendium of Marian Devotions, an Encyclopedia of the Church's Prayers, Dogmas, Devotions, Sacramentals, and Feasts Honoring the Mother of God. So he's the perfect person to have on the show to talk about Saint Jacinta. Welcome back to the show today, Father Ed.
Thank you very much.
So I enjoyed the article on Catholic Exchange, and I love the attention that we put on St. Jacinta. I think a lot of people talk about Lucia of Fatima, of course. Maybe she's the head of the seers or the eldest of the seers, so she gets a lot of the press or the attention. But St. Jacinta is a saint in her own right, and I think that your article really points out some beautiful parts about her spirituality. Tell us a little bit, what inspired you to write about this saint?
Well, I've always had a great devotion to the Blessed Mother, and as you know, I wrote the book Marian Compendium, which is a summary of Marian devotion, Marian dogmas, as well as the chief Marian apparitions that have been approved, Fatima, Lourdes, as well as Guadalupe. And I thought I'd write a short article on Jacinta because, as you said, often there's a lot of attention paid to Lucia, rightfully so, but the other Jacinta, as well as Francisco, they can sometimes be relegated to a subordinate position, but they're, as you pointed out, they were already canonized saints. I mean, that's they right. were canonized 2017 by Pope Francis and beatified earlier by John Paul II. So the fact that they are canonized saints among the youngest, too, I thought it opportune to do it. And I've been involved in catechesis for three decades, working with little children as well as their parents, and I just feel that for children that are preparing for the first communion, what better models than these two little children? I mean, they were not highly educated. They were relatively poor. They were shepherd children. Actually, Lucia learned how to read and write. They really never learned how to read and write. They were taken when they're very young, but 9 and 10 years of age. So I admire them, and. The three of them, they have common ground is that they had this wonderful apparition of the angel in 1916 three times. But then they had the apparition of Our Lady of Fatima May 13th all the way through October 13th, the 13th of every month except August because they're in jail in August. But in a certain sense, their charism is different. I give the example that a Dominican is not a Jesuit, an Augustinian is not a Carmelite, and myself as an oblate of the Virgin Mary, we all have specific charisms which differentiates us from the others, and that's the real richness of the mystical body of Christ. We all have contributions. So John Paul II, when he beatified the two, Francisco and Jacinta, he actually called little Francisco a little mystic. And the reason behind that was because this little boy, he enjoyed being by himself because he could go and visit the Eucharistic Lord. And he had this real desire just to console the Eucharistic Lord there in the tabernacle. So John Paul II called him a little mystic, whereas in the case of Jacinta, she was actually called by John Paul II a little victim soul. Now, when you hear victim soul, probably what surfaces in your mind right away would be like a Padre Pio, or maybe a Josefa Menendez, or maybe it'd be someone like, even the little flower would be a victim of God's merciful love. But Jacinta also, John Paul II called her a little victim soul. The reason behind that was that in July 13th, 1917, Our Lady appeared and showed them a graphic, almost Dante-esque depiction of hell, which they could see the fire, they could see these souls that were floating without any equilibrium. They could see these hideous animals that were the devils. They could hear loud shrieks because of the suffering of those condemned souls. And little Jacinta, after she saw this, she was astounded, and it moved her. They're a good kid, but it moved her to a much deeper relationship with God, a much deeper prayer life. So much so that before they would just pray the rosary because their parents forced them to by saying, Our Father, Hail Mary, Hail Mary, Hail Mary, Hail Mary, Hail Mary, Hail Mary, Hail Mary. And that was about it. They could get finished with it so they could go off and pray. It was after that we see the children, especially Jacinta, making these heroic sacrifices. The purpose was would be so that the sinners that are heading toward the precipice could be saved. She'd be wearing a rope around her waist. She would give up dancing, which was her favorite pastime. Mm-hmm. Then she gave up her favorite food, which were the delicious, luscious grapes from the Portuguese hillside. She would pray many rosaries. When she'd be in the hot, humid weather of Portugal in the summer, she'd offer up the heat for the conversion of sinners, and basically she offered her whole life as a means of being a victim soul. I find, even though I'm an older priest, I find, read the life of this little saint, it motivates me to want to be a little bit more prayerful and penitential. And then, of course, the Lord called her brother and then Jacinta to heaven when they were just little kids. So I just the thought of these little children. So I've written a lot of articles that have been published by Catholic Exchange. It was actually published yesterday on Catholic Exchange, which happened to be May 13th, which would be, of course, the first of the six apparitions that related to the children. So I thought it was very opportune. And you know I think there's a real dearth of catechesis. If you really want to have a good catechesis, Father Robert Fox said that Fatima is an excellent summary of the gospel as well as the catechesis. It really is. So I love these children. And you pointed out one of the reasons why Lucia is not a saint yet is she died in the year 2005.
That's right.
She was I think she was 98 years old, and she actually died a couple months before John Paul II. She died on February 13th, 2005, and JP2 died April 2nd that same year. So, and John Paul II, you probably know that he was actually shot on May 13th, 1981. The following year, he actually traveled to Fatima, Portugal, May 13th, thanking Our Lady Fatima for having saved him from death in that very, very critical shot that a lot of people thought he was not going to make it, but
there was an incredible moment, and some people see it as the fulfillment of the third secret of Fatima, happening on May 13th with a bishop in white being shot. Of course,
yes.
There's some differences in that prophecy and the actual events, but some people, by metaphor, see that it's connected. We've been talking today with Father Ed Broom, the author of the book Compendium of Marian Devotions, and there's a brand new article that's out about Saint Jacinta and Our Lady of Fatima on Catholic Exchange. And Father, one of the things that I found fascinating about your article was you say that Our Lady revealed some little-known statements to Jacinta that had great importance in 1917, but even bigger importance today. And you list five of them: war, fashions, priests, matrimony, and the call to purity. Talk a little bit about these sort of hidden statements given to Jacinta.
Yes. These were these hidden statements that were revealed to Jacinta, aside from the other apparitions. And first was that she made the statement, Our Lady made the statement that war is actually a punishment for sin. Fulton Sheen goes on to say, when you have a lot of people in the world committing individual sins, it eventually escalates and it snowballs into eventually a war. And look what's going on in the world today, in the Ukraine and Israel. It's just, and even John Paul II, when he wrote the Apostolic Letter, the Blessed Virgin Mary and the Rosary, in which he incorporated the luminous mysteries, he said we should pray the Rosary on a daily basis, and then he said pray for two specific intentions. One was world peace, and the second would be the sake of the family. This was right in the wake of the attack on the Twin Towers. And actually, John Paul II in that apostolic letter mentions the Twin Towers. So I think now more than ever, we want to be praying that these wars would end as soon as possible. In fashions, we're talking about 100 years ago, and look at the way the world is today, especially just the widespread, pervasive diffusion of pornography. I mean, we all know that this is the number one addiction today. It's destroying children, teenagers, families. This prophecy is very, very evident in the modern society. And then priests are called to a life of great purity, but also priests are called to dedicate themselves to priestly ministries and not dedicate themselves to things that are extraneous or not pertinent to our sacrament of holy orders. And also is mentioned the fact that a priest should obey. Diocesan priests are called to obey the bishop. We are too as religious, but also we're called to obey our superiors and our provincials. That's one of the three vows that we take, chastity, poverty, and obedience. And then matrimony was mentioned, in which Our Lady said that many matrimonies or marriages are not good. Many are not. They're not based on the love of God, but they're based more on materialistic values, and many are dominated by the spirit of lust. You know, the whole idea of the contraceptive mentality is not something that exists only among the people in the world, but it's entered into the very fabric of society. You know, you cannot be living a contraceptive mentality, be an authentic follower of Jesus and Holy Mother Church. And then the call to purity would be the last one, and that takes us back to July 13th apparition, which Our Lady actually said to Jacinta as well as to the world at large, that most souls are lost because of the sins against the sixth and the ninth commandment, would be the sins against the virtue of chastity. So I think that these points that Our Lady revealed to Jacinta are very pertinent to what's going on today. And it's a prophecy that we're seeing unfolded before our very eyes, I think.
We're talking today with Father Ed Broom, author of Compendium of Marian Devotions, and there's a brand new article, Saint Jacinta and Our Lady of Fatima, on Catholic Exchange. And you finished the article giving people some ideas about the month of Mary, some things that people can, three small but beautiful flowers, you say, avoiding sin, praying the Most Holy Rosary, and studying the Fatima message. Why is Fatima so essential to the celebration of May as the month of Mary?
Well, I would say first because she appeared May 13th. To Jacinta, Francisca, and Lucia, and every one of these six apparitions from May 13th all the way up until October 13th, Our Lady said, "Pray the Rosary." From May 13th all the way up to October 13th, to pray the Rosary, and then she actually reveals her identity. I've mentioned in the Marian Compendium that Our Lady of Lourdes identifies herself as the Immaculate Conception. Our Lady of Guadalupe identifies herself as, "Am I not your mother?" Whereas Our Lady of Fatima identifies herself as Our Lady of the Rosary. So that I think is very opportune in this month, because she first appeared on May 13th, and she wanted processions as well as she wanted, like in Lourdes, a church to be built so that people, because Mary is always she's always Christocentric. She's also ecclesial, and she's also very biblical, as you read in Mariales Cultus of Saint Pope Paul VI. And Mary does not take us away from Christ or the Church, but Mary leads us right into the very heart of Christ as well as his mystical body, the Church. So we see Lourdes, Fatima, and Guadalupe. You have millions of pilgrimages, pilgrims going to these places to honor Mary, but Mary brings us where? To the heart of Christ himself, which is the Eucharist and the sacramental life.
Absolutely. We've been talking today with Father Ed Broom, author of Compendium of Marian Devotions, and also I'd like people to check out this new article, CatholicExchange.com. You can go to see St. Jacinta and Our Lady of Fatima, the brand new article there. I posted it to the Facebook feed of The Miracle Hunter. Thank you so much, Father Ed, for joining us on today's program and for your great reflections on St. Jacinta in this month of May.
Thank you, and God bless you.
God bless. That was Father Ed Broom. Check out his book, Compendium of Marian Devotions, and also on Catholic Exchange, his St. Jacinta article. Both are excellent reads. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Hey, I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. And I love getting the emails, and I also love when I give talks. I travel around the country at different shrines, Catholic parishes, conferences, and I talk about miracles, and most typically these days about Eucharistic miracles, since different places are looking to increase Marian devotion, and Eucharistic miracles, in my opinion, is one of the very best ways to do that. And so people can connect with me on my MiracleHunter.com website, click on the contact tab, send me a message that way, and maybe I'll be speaking at a parish in your area coming soon. And so we got a question that came in this past week from Mary. Mary asks, why are certain popes, like Pope Leo XIII, not canonized or even have a cause started on their behalf? And it's a great question. And I think when you look at the total number of popes, maybe 265 or 266, depending on if you count Peter, I think 83 of those popes are canonized. So that's a big number. It seems Pope Francis has joked before that the retirement plan for being pope is quite nice. So he acknowledges that many popes go on to be saints, and that, of course, implies they're in heaven. And so why are certain popes, they don't have a canonization or a canonization process underway? And unfortunately, I don't know the answer to this. This is probably going to be one of my all-time worst answers, me being that I don't really know. I think sometimes there are politics that go into it, especially when we relate to World War II and things of this nature, the participation of the church in these things. I don't know. Sometimes we don't see the movement on canonization causes that we might expect. And we also have this idea that maybe all of the popes are to be saints in the modern times. At least that's how it has been going forward. Even Pope John Paul I, who was pope for a very short time, his canonization cause is underway. And so we'll see how he moves along as well. So I don't have a real answer for that. Perhaps the people in Rome, they know the best about why these Roman causes start or don't start. And so unfortunately, I don't have a lot of insight into that. But it's a great question. Why aren't all the modern popes canonized? Or why even draw the line anywhere if we're going to be canonizing everyone? I don't really know. So that's it's a challenging question. But I do imagine that that politics always gets into it at some point. And beyond that, I don't have a lot to say. So thanks so much, Mary, for your question. And if you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, maybe I'll do a better job next week with a better answer. Send me an email, and maybe I'll be answering your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. We do this every week, where we look at the Marian devotion of the day as it lines up exactly to the day's date. There's Fatima, Lourdes, and Guadalupe. You all know those feast days, but believe it or not, there's a different Marian devotion that is lined up to each day of the calendar year, either a feast day or a miracle or a commemoration or some event, a building of a basilica on that date. So for every day, there's a different Marian title. For today's day, we've got Our Lady of Wesemlin in Lucerne in Switzerland in the year 1531, which is coincidentally the year that Our Lady of Guadalupe appeared. During the night of Pentecost on May 18, 1531, the city councilor Maurice von Mettenville, he saw the Virgin Mary surrounded by a heavenly light and an arrow, and the moon at her feet, and Mary appeared crowned, carrying the child Jesus on her arm, while the child held a scepter. Faced with her majestic appearance, the man was shocked, fell on his knees, and promised to rebuild the chapel and put the portrait of Mary in her place. as she had appeared. And that is Our Lady of Wesemlin from Lucerne in Switzerland in the year 1531. For more information on 365 Days with Mary, you can pick up the book, download the app from the iOS App Store, or you can go to the website, 365dayswithmary.com. Let's take a look at the miracle of the day. We've been doing this in this year. We've been looking at miracles that have happened throughout history on the day's date. And so we're going to talk today about a miracle that happened in 1986 on May 18th. And we're talking about an apparition in Shubra in Egypt. And there are a number of these Coptic apparitions, apparitions of Mary in Egypt. And this one in Shubra is said to have happened in 1986. And so one of the innumerable miracles that occurred during the apparitions of Our Lady in Sant Damiana Church in Shubra is the following miracle, which was published in Vatana Weekly newspaper on June 1st, 1986. The mother of Teresa Solomon Yosef, and she was 6 years old, reports the miracle that the Blessed Holy Virgin Mary did this to her daughter. Teresa had lost vision in her right eye after a needle pierced this eye and injured the cornea and the eye lens, causing traumatic cataracts. And the girl was unable to see using this eye. So this occurred on November 17, 1984. The injury did. On December 5, 1984, the child was operated upon to remove the destroyed lens in order to use an external replacement contact lens, but the right eye condition deteriorated due to a secondary infection. And mother Teresa's mother continued, she said, on Sunday, May 18, 1986, I took my daughter and we went to St. Damiana Church in Altarai in Balakaya in Shubra, and after receiving Holy Communion, we ascended to the church's balcony and stood there with the crowd. And suddenly, a strong light shone from the right side of the veil of the altar. My daughter raised her hand towards the source of light, then wiped her sick eye with her palm, and suddenly shouted exultantly, I can see, Mother, I can see. She could put her right hand over her good eye and still see with her right eye, which was once blind. And Dr. Fayez Akun, he also serves in St. Damiana Church, examined the child, tested the visual acuity of both the eyes, and found that the girl could now see using her right eye, which had been healed miraculously. And Father Bishoy, who was at this time helping Father Heg Abdel Messi El Serbini, the church priest, has recorded and documented this miracle. And so that is a miracle happening on May 18th, 1986. That is the miraculous cure of blindness of Teresa Solomon Yosef, a six-year-old girl. And we'll try to report on a new miracle day of the day each and every week. Let's take a look at They Might Be Saints. We always try to report on the sainthood news, people coming down the pipeline, moving along from servant of God to venerable to blessed and then to saint. Last month, Pope Francis received an audience, his most Reverend Eminence Cardinal Marcello Semeraro, the prefect for the Dicastery for the Cause of Saints. And during this audience, the Pope authorized the Dicastery to promulgate a decree regarding the heroic virtues of the Servant of God Elisabetta Iacobucci, professed nun of the Institute of the Alcantarine Franciscan Tertiary Sisters. She was born on July 23, 1958. Or 1858 in Trevi in Italy, and died on February 10th, 1939 in Malta di Sorrento, also in Italy. She was a professed nun of the Institute of Alcantarine Franciscan Tertiary Sisters. She led a virtuous life in the simplicity of everyday life. She showed great humility and a spirit of service, always available to accept the most humble tasks in the awareness that it was the will of God expressed through her superiors. Her genuine faith allowed her to open up to grace and undertake a profound spiritual journey. And that was from the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints website. And so she has moved along to Venerable. That's Venerable Elisabetta. With one miracle, she will be blessed. Two miracles, she'll be a saint. Now let's take a look at the Might Be Saint of the Day. We do this every week also, where we talk about people on the path to sainthood whose feast day or death anniversary lines up exactly to the day's date. For May 18th, we've got the memorial of Blessed Blandina Merten, who lived from 1883 to 1918 in Germany. And she was born on July 10th, 1883 in Germany, and after graduating from an institute for teaching, Maria taught in several Catholic elementary schools in the Trier, Germany region. And she was known for her special care to the children of the poor, helping them however she could and ensuring their active lives in the parish. And she felt a call to religious life, and she joined the Ursuline Sisters, taking the name of Blandine of the Sacred Heart, in making her perpetual vows in 1913. As the Ursulines are teaching order, Sister Blandine returned to teaching and added religious education and served as a catechist. She was assigned to a new place in 1916 and developed incurable tuberculosis, and she was transferred to Trier for treatment and a better climate, but she continued to teach when she was strong enough and effectively lived her last 2 years in the house infirmary where she spent her time in prayer. And she died on May 18, 1918 in Trier in Germany of tuberculosis, and she was buried at the Basilica of St. Paulinus there. And Pope John Paul II in 1983 decreed her as venerable, and she was beatified also by the same Pope on November 1st, 1987, her beatification miracle involving the cure of Sister Irabenta Puganam of a malignant sarcoma in the year 1969. And that is the might-be saint of the day, Sister Blandine Merton from Germany. For more information on this saint or any of the future saints that we just talk about on the show, They Might Be Saints, you can go to theymightbesaints.com. And if you go to that website, you'll find out when the new episodes are. So May 15th at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, we've got Blessed Miriam Teresa Domjanovic, her short, impactful life, present the case for her canonization for the Sister of Charity, which includes the only known cure of bilateral macular degeneration. So check that one out. Blessed Miriam Domjanovic on They Might Be Saints on Wednesday, May 15th at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with John Thavis, the former Rome Bureau Chief of Catholic News Service, about the new Vatican document on Marian apparitions. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. The big news from this past week, of course, is the new statement that's on its way out from the Vatican related to how it judges claims of Marian apparitions and other revelations. This is big news since the last time they did this was 46 years ago. So it's an exciting time for people who are interested in this sort of thing, of Marian apparitions, to find out what the how the Church will be handling these things going forward. And there was a new article that just came out this week related to Marian apparitions. It was published on America Magazine, and it was from John Thavis, the former Rome Bureau Chief of the Catholic News Service and author of the book, The Vatican Prophecies, Investigating Supernatural Signs, Apparitions, and Miracles in the Modern Age. We welcome that author to the program today, John Thavis.
Happy to join you, Michael.
Yeah, thanks for being with us today, and we're in interesting times here, in always interesting times, I suppose, in our Catholic Church, but they're turning their attention now to supernatural apparitions, as your article says, which are when we focus on those big ones, Fatima, Lourdes, Guadalupe, perhaps we might call them the approved ones, and any handful of others that are less than 20, in my counting anyways. There's a lot of celebration with the establishment of feast days and maybe even the canonization of visionaries and the building of basilicas. And there's a lot of excitement and honor that goes in with these approved Marian apparitions. But those make up a tiny portion of the claimed apparitions around the world, don't they?
Yes, in fact, I covered the Vatican for more than 30 years, and I was always surprised at the reports, usually coming from local bishops who came to Rome, of how many reported divine messages or apparitions or supernatural phenomena they were having to deal with at the local level. And most of these incidents or events never make it to the attention of the Vatican, in part because the Vatican realizes they don't have the resources to evaluate the authenticity of new apparitions, at least not at the beginning. So they tend to give the ball back to local bishops and say, handle it, and handle it with prudence and patience. Which
it's a little bit of a hot potato, I think. I think perhaps in some earlier centuries, perhaps or earlier days, the Rome was the one in charge of it, and then now the bishops are the ones. So they say maybe under the idea of subsidiarity or just, you know, take the hot potato and you handle it. I think nobody really wants to deal with these claims that happen. Of course, we celebrate the big ones, the approved ones, but the ones that aren't are, I think, are difficult for all the bishops.
Right. Where Rome has come in is in establishing the principles And the principles or the criteria for judging apparitions really are distilled from centuries of the church's spiritual history. Back in the day, people had visions. People experienced what they felt were supernatural appearances, messages. And generally, these were individuals who would then come under the guidance of either their local priest or a spiritual advisor. And this happened very quietly in most places. Well, of course, the world has changed. And now it seems that nothing happens quietly. And this is something I've written about, that the Vatican and bishops find themselves quite often in a situation where they are asked to investigate an event that has already, in a certain sense, gone viral. I'm sure familiar with some of these incidents where, let's say, a woman or a man claims they're receiving messages from God when they pray, or from Mary when they pray before a statue. And pretty soon, and I mean very soon, there can be hundreds or thousands of enthusiastic followers who start appearing at these events. And sometimes the bishop finds out about it much later. And at that point, it's very hard to kind of rein in the enthusiasm of the followers.
Yeah, it's one of these runaway train kind of situations that they always want to return people to a normal or in good practice of the faith. And so, I think we have these cases like on October 13th, 1917, of course, the miracle of the sun. If all those people didn't come out to the COVID area and claim to see what they saw, maybe, you don't see the support, the investigation, the approval of Fatima and its recognition as one of the great Marian apparitions in history, and perhaps the greatest. So it's the support of the faithful,
exactly,
the enthusiasm of the faithful that drives the investigations, the need to investigate. But I'm quite sure that the crowds that show up are difficult in the first place.
It is a dilemma because, on the one hand, of course, the Church and the Vatican have to be open to the idea that, well, God and Mary and the saints can work in this world. We don't exclude that. We don't try to pretend that doesn't exist. And the Vatican also recognizes the sensus fidelium, the sense of the faithful in helping to determine whether something is authentic. In other words, they do recognize it's not just up to some church office in Rome to determine whether, for example, Mary is really appearing at a certain place. That the belief of the faithful and the sense that the Catholic faithful have does have its own value here. So the Vatican cannot ignore, for example, when millions of pilgrims go to a site that has yet to be officially approved.
That's right. Yeah, it's an interesting thing how it has to happen. And I running the miraclehunter.com website, I get I like to joke I have the funniest inbox of anybody you'll ever meet. The messages that come in of people claiming things and wondering how they'll get investigated and what would Rome say about this or the bishop say about this. I get quite a few interesting emails coming my way. And it's my sense.
I get emails too, believe me, after I wrote my book about investigating apparitions.
Yep.
And you can only imagine what's coming in to the Vatican offices.
Oh, I know. And I think that they're very happy that the local bishops are on top of it or supposed to be on top of it. But I guess my question or my comment was that I think it's pretty rare when a local bishop will investigate private messages that a person in the quiet of their own home who doesn't tell anybody about it, I don't think that the Vatican or the local bishop will initiate an investigation in most cases where it's a very quiet sort of, internal understanding of these messages and they keep them to themselves and only share it with the bishop. It seems to me that, especially in this modern day and age, that the bishops move when attention is given to these things.
That's precisely correct. And there's no real need for a bishop to monitor the private mystical or spiritual experiences right. of an individual person. I mean, it might be in the interest of the church, a local priest or a spiritual advisor to monitor that. But it's not something a bishop need be concerned about. I would say what a bishop looks for, yes, is when crowds start to gather, that's when the bishop has to move into action. And one of the first things a bishop is going to look at is the visionary or visionaries. You know, for example, at Lourdes, Bernadette, her simplicity and her honesty counted for a lot. The fact that she was, you know, a simple, uneducated person actually counted toward authenticity of her visions. And it's interesting, though, that when we look at back at Bernadette and compare her to some of the modern visionaries who have become media figures and celebrities kind of in their own right, Bernadette definitely did not become a celebrity. She was not immensely popular, and even in her hometown, and was sent off to a convent where she died at a very young age. But when we look at apparitions that have been approved, like Lourdes, you know, there's a reason popes have gone to Lourdes and said they'll stand behind the authenticity of this apparition. It's because when you boil it down to the essentials, the message of Lourdes is pretty simple. Divine favor for the poor and the humble, eternal happiness in the life to come, and prayer and compassion for the sick. That's a message that is not going to disqualify anybody in terms of having an authentic vision. So that's what counts toward authenticity. On the other hand, what would be suspect in the eyes of the Vatican and local church authorities is when an apparition or a divine message starts giving out, for example, superfluous details about the gospel account of Jesus, or make new demands on followers. There was a recent case in Italy of a woman who had been having visions and messages from Mary for 8 years, one of which was an order from Mary, supposed order from Mary for followers to go to a hill where they would be made invisible by angels. Well, this obviously put that apparition in the category of highly suspect. And in fact, the local bishop a couple of months ago actually came out and ruled that it was not supernatural and that people should stop listening to the woman who was having the visions.
Right. Yeah, no, that's an easy one, an easy one,
right,
to inspire the red flag to come out. We've been talking today with John Thavis, the former Rome Bureau Chief of the Catholic News Service and author of The Vatican Prophecies. We've been talking a little bit about the way the Catholic Church investigates and approves Marian apparitions in light of the new document we're seeing from Rome. And so, this is, you mentioned that private revelation does not complete Scripture or make new demands on the faithful, and we see Pope Benedict having said that on multiple occasions, so I think that's important. Now, when we talk about Pope Francis, what do you think his angle is when it comes to private revelation? I know that he's made some comments specifically about Medjugorje. I think it's pretty clear that's what he was talking about as a postmaster. He has a great Marian devotion, of course, but how does he view Marian apparitions in your assessment?
It's pretty hard to figure out what Pope Francis thinks about apparitions, to be honest. You know, Pope Benedict was easy to figure out because the way he spoke was very, very rational and ordered and A, B, C, D, and usually with doctrinal footnotes. Pope Francis does not speak that way. He's off the cuff, and he once made the remark that Mary's not some kind of postmaster sending off messages, and everybody, you know, around the world, but especially in Medjugorje, where some 40 million pilgrims have been going to witness alleged apparitions since 1981, they were a little concerned because supposedly at Medjugorje there are still daily messages from Mary. On the other hand, Pope Francis actually relaxed the rules on pilgrimages to Medjugorje.
Right.
And so that was seen as a sign of favor. He has chosen not to publish a report that was handed in his second year of his pontificate about Medjugorje, which, of course, raises questions. What was in the report? You know, right. Did it reach, what conclusion did it reach, and why hasn't it been published? Well, one big reason it hasn't been published, in my opinion, is that because Medjugorje is an ongoing process, you can hardly give a definitive judgment on an apparition that is still going on today and may go on tomorrow. So it is tough to figure out exactly what Pope Francis thinks about this. But I would say in general, he's very open to the idea of God working in the world and of miracles happening through the intercession of holy people. He's made that clear. And so I think he views it less as a theologian and more in the way that probably normal Catholics would look at this. They kind of weigh in on both sides.
Yeah, it's truly fascinating. I think that, as your article points out, the Vatican has been moving away from the approval of many Marian apparitions. We see a very small number in modern times that have the approval of bishops, and a tiny number that have any support coming out of Rome. And your article ends with sort of the message to the bishops is to focus on the essential spiritual lessons of the apparitions.
Well, that's right. I mean, as well as anyone, that the number of official apparitions that have been proclaimed authentic by the Vatican is very small. That doesn't mean they don't allow local traditions to continue. And some of these local traditions are centuries old, and the Vatican's not going to go down and try to investigate these things. They don't have the resources. They don't have, as I put it, they don't have a department of the supernatural that tracks these things.
I'd like to join that department if they ever start one, but for now I'll just run the website until the Vatican does their own.
You can be an advisor. How's that?
That's right. Well, we're so grateful to you, John Thavis, for joining us on today's program, for sharing your thoughts. Not many people can share the reflections that you shared today, so we're so grateful for your insights, especially in lieu of this document.
It was great to join you. Thank you.
Thank you so much. God bless. That was John Thavis, former Rome Bureau Chief of the Catholic News Service and the author of Vatican Prophecies. Check that one out. That's one of my favorite books on the topic. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to EWTN.com/radio, check out the audio archives, or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guests today, John Thavis and Father Ed Broom, talking to us about St. Jacinta. Check out Explore with the Miracle Hunter Champion next Saturday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. I'll be traveling to Champion, Wisconsin, where the Virgin Mary appeared to Belgian farm worker Adele Bryce in 1859. This is the first and only church-approved Marian apparition in the history of the United States. Check that one out. I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.